This article is brought to you by the best-selling books I Write Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to conduct a mediation in a small community where everyone knows each other. A practical guide to mediating disputes where history and loyalty run deep. In short, community mediation skills are not just standard mediation with friendlier faces. When everyone in the room shares history, the mediator must work harder to protect neutrality, manage loyalty, and build agreements that survive Monday morning at the local shop. Disclose any prior connection to either party before the session begins. Run a private pre-mediation meeting with each person before they sit together. Build an agreement specific enough that neither party can quietly reinterpret it later. Definition: community mediation skills are the structured techniques a mediator applies to resolve disputes between people who share ongoing relationships, social networks, and history. Unlike formal or workplace mediation, community settings require careful management of familiarity, perceived bias, and the social consequences of any outcome. Two neighbours had a boundary dispute in a village outside Derry. Someone asked me to mediate. I knew both families. I thought that was an advantage. I was wrong. Within 20 minutes, one party looked at me and said, "You went to school with his brother. You are not going to be fair." She was not wrong to question me. I had not prepared for the weight of shared history in that room, and the session collapsed before it began. Community mediation skills demand a level of preparation and self-awareness that formal mediation rarely requires. The dispute itself is often the smaller problem. The relationships, the reputations, and the social consequences are what make this genuinely hard. This guide gives you a process that works in exactly these conditions, step by step, with the scripts and tools to back it up. Why mediating in close-knit communities is a different skill entirely. In a formal setting, parties may never see each other again. In a small community, they will. They will pass each other at the market, sit near each other at community events, and share acquaintances who will hear about what happened in that room. That reality changes everything. The mediator carries the added burden of existing relationships. You likely know at least one party. You may have an opinion formed before anyone says a word. The parties know this, and so does everyone watching. Your perceived neutrality is as important as your actual neutrality, and the two are not always the same thing. Loyalty also creates pressure that formal mediation does not produce. People in small communities fear being seen as the difficult party, the one who would not let it go, or the one who came out worse. They may agree to things in the room that they have no intention of honouring outside it, simply to avoid social embarrassment. Your job is to build agreements that are specific enough to hold, even when social pressure fades. What must be in place before the session begins? Do not walk into a joint session without completing two things first. Assess your own position. Ask yourself honestly whether you can be neutral in this dispute. If you have a closer personal relationship with one party, a financial connection, or a strong prior opinion about who's right, you're not the right mediator for this case. Refer it. There is no loss of face in recognizing the limit of your position. There is significant harm in proceeding without that recognition. Run separate pre-mediation meetings. Meet each party individually before they sit in the same room. These meetings serve three purposes. You hear each person's account without the pressure of the other's presence. You identify the emotional flashpoints before they ignite in a joint session, and you begin building the trust each party needs to feel that the process is safe. Without this step, you walk into the joint session blind. During these pre-mediation conversations, ask each person two questions directly. What do you need from this process? And what outcome would you be able to live with? Write down their answers. You will need them later. The mediation process for small community settings. Step 1. Open the session with ground rules. Begin by stating the purpose of the session clearly and briefly. Then set the ground rules out loud, in your own words. Try this script. We are here to work toward an agreement that both of you can live with. I am not a judge. I will not decide who's right. My job is to keep this conversation productive. The rules are simple. One person speaks at a time, no interrupting, and everything said in this room stays in this room unless we agree otherwise. Ground rules matter more in community mediation than in any other setting. They create a container. When a session gets heated, you can return to them. We agreed on one speaker at a time. Let her finish. Step 2. Invite each party to speak without interruption. Ask each person to describe the situation from their own perspective. Go one at a time. Do not let the other party react until the speaker is done. This is harder in community settings because both parties likely have strong feelings and a long history to draw on. Your job during this stage is to listen, take brief notes, and reflect back what you hear without agreeing or disagreeing. A useful phrase. So what I am hearing you say is that right? This shows the speaker they have been understood, and it shows the other party that you're not taking sides. Do not rush this step. Let people feel heard before you move toward solutions. A person who does not feel heard will resist any agreement you reach. Step 3. Name the core issues. After both parties have spoken, summarize what you heard in neutral language. Strip out the blame, the history, and the emotion. State the core issues plainly. For example, it sounds like there are two main issues here. The first is where the boundary between your properties actually sits. The second is how you both want to handle shared access going forward. Does that sound right to both of you? This step does something important. It removes the parties from their positions and puts the problem in the middle of the table. You are no longer mediating between two people who are angry at each other. You are helping two people look at a shared problem together. That shift is not automatic. You have to create it deliberately. Step 4. Explore interests, not just positions. A position is what someone says they want. An interest is why they want it. In community disputes, the stated position is rarely the real issue. The neighbor who insists the fence must move 3 feet may actually be worried that their garden is shrinking and they will lose the vegetable plot they have worked for years. The other party who refuses to move it may be worried about feeling pushed around by someone who has always had more influence in the community. Ask, help me understand why this matters to you. What would change for you if we got this resolved? Listen for the interest beneath the position. When you find it, name it gently. So it sounds like what really matters here is feeling respected in your own space. Is that fair? For more on how Amit needs drive disputes, see how Amit needs drive team conflict and what to say to restore synergy. The same principles apply here. Step 5. Use a private caucus when the room gets stuck. A caucus is a private meeting you hold with one party while the other waits outside. Use it when the joint session stalls, when one person becomes too distressed to continue, or when you sense one party is not being honest in front of the other. In a caucus, you can ask questions that would escalate the tension if asked in the room. Is there something you have not been able to say in there? What is really stopping you from agreeing to this? Whatever is said in a caucus stays confidential unless the party gives you permission to share it. Caucuses are especially useful in small communities where face-saving matters. A person may be willing to concede a point privately that they would never concede in front of the other party. Step 6. Build the agreement together. When both parties have expressed their interests and you have identified common ground, move toward a written agreement. Do not let the session end with a verbal understanding. Verbal agreements in small communities are reinterpreted the moment people leave the room. Write the agreement in plain language in the room, with both parties present. Be specific. Not they will be respectful of each other's property, but neither party will place any object within 1 meter of the shared boundary without notifying the other party first. Vague agreements collapse. Specific agreements hold. Read the agreement back to both parties before anyone signs it. Ask each person directly, can you commit to this? Wait for a clear yes. If either person hesitates, that hesitation tells you something important. Step 7. Agree on a follow-up. Before the session ends, set a follow-up date. In small community settings, this step is not optional. It signals that the agreement matters beyond the room, and it gives both parties a reason to honour it. A brief check-in, even a 15-minute conversation 3 weeks later, catches problems before they become new conflicts. When one party refuses to attend, not every community dispute produces two willing parties. Sometimes one person refuses to sit in the same room as the other, or refuses to engage at all. In these cases, you can use subtle diplomacy, meeting each party separately, carrying proposals between them, and building an agreement without a joint session. This takes more time and requires you to be precise about what each party actually said, rather than what you interpreted. Write everything down. Read it back before you leave each meeting. If you are managing a situation where strong personalities are making the process feel impossible, the article on tension management mistakes to avoid when mediating between two strong personalities addresses this directly. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book Say It Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at imanblickthorne.com. Now, back to the article. The mistakes that collapse community mediation. The mistake: skipping the pre-mediation meetings because you already know both parties. Why it happens: familiarity creates a false sense of readiness. You think you know what the dispute is about because you know the people. What to do instead? Run the pre-mediation meetings regardless of how well you know the parties. What people say in private is rarely what you expect. The mistake: allowing the session to become a history lesson. Why it happens: in close communities, the current dispute is often the latest episode in a longer story. Both parties want the full story heard. What to do instead? Acknowledge the history briefly and move forward. Try: I can hear this goes back a long way. For today, let us focus on what needs to change from here. The mistake: producing a vague agreement to end the session quickly. Why it happens: by the end of a difficult session, everyone is tired. A vague agreement feels like resolution. What to do instead? Slow down at the agreement stage. Vague agreements do not just fail, they create new grievances when each party applies their own interpretation. The mistake: not disclosing your own connection to one of the parties. Why it happens: you assume your professionalism is self-evident and that disclosure would raise unnecessary doubt. What to do instead? Disclose any significant prior relationship at the start. It builds trust rather than undermining it. Concealing it does far more damage if it surfaces later. For guidance on staying grounded when a session becomes tense for you personally, see how to use the core framework to stay grounded during a tense workplace conversation. Your pre-session preparation checklist. Use this before every community mediation you conduct. Number 1. Have I assessed my own neutrality honestly, and am I confident I can hold it throughout the session? Number 2. Have I met privately with each party before the joint session? Number 3. Do I know the core issue each party wants addressed, in their own words? Number 4. Do I know the emotional flashpoints likely to arise in the joint session? Number 5. Have I prepared my opening statement, including the ground rules? Number 6. Do I have paper or a document ready to draft the written agreement during the session? Number 7. Have I arranged a follow-up date to check how the agreement is holding? If you cannot answer yes to all 7, you are not ready to begin. Go back and fill the gap. The preparation is not a formality. It is the foundation the whole session stands on. For a complementary, structured approach to conflict in workplace settings, the DEAL method for resolving conflicts that are fracturing team synergy and the DEAL method for workplace tension before it escalates both offer frameworks that translate well to community contexts. And if the dispute surfaced during a group setting, the guidance on how to handle conflict during meetings gives you tools for that specific moment. Holding the ground when history fills the room. There's one thing I have learned across decades of this work. In a small community, a mediator is not just resolving a dispute. You are helping people find a way to keep living alongside each other. That is a heavier responsibility than settling a contract, and it deserves more care. The process in this article will carry you through the session, but the quality of your preparation, the courage to stay neutral when it is uncomfortable, and the patience to write a specific agreement rather than a comfortable one, those are what determine whether the resolution holds past the first difficult week. If you want to build the empathy that makes this process work at a deeper level, the article on how to resolve interpersonal tension through empathy is a natural companion to what you have read here. Community mediation skills are earned through practice, not acquired through reading alone. Take the checklist, run the pre-mediation meetings, and trust the process enough to follow it even when the room pushes back. The roots of a genuine resolution go deeper than the agreement on the page, but the agreement on the page is where you have to start. Frequently asked questions. What are community mediation skills? Community mediation skills are the specific techniques a mediator uses to resolve disputes in close-knit settings with the parties via ongoing relationships, history, and social ties. They include managing bias, building neutrality, and guiding both sides toward agreements that hold over time. How do you stay neutral in community mediation when you know both parties? You stay neutral by disclosing any prior relationship before you begin, setting explicit ground rules, and tracking your own reactions, throughout the session. If your connection to one party is significant, refer the case to someone with more distance rather than risk a compromised process. What is a pre-mediation meeting, and why does it matter? A pre-mediation meeting is a private conversation you hold with each party before the joint session. It lets you understand each person's concerns without pressure, spot emotional flashpoints early, and build enough trust that both sides are willing to sit in the same room. How long does a community mediation session typically take? Most community mediation sessions run between 90 minutes and 3 hours. Complex disputes with long shared history often need more time or a follow-up session. Rushing a resolution in a small community usually produces agreements that collapse within weeks. What do you do when a mediation agreement breaks down in a small community? You schedule a brief follow-up meeting with both parties, not to relitigate the original conflict, but to identify what specifically went wrong with the agreement. Adjust the terms together. In a small community, a broken agreement damages your credibility as a mediator, so follow-up is essential. Can you conduct mediation in a small community if one party refuses to attend? Yes, though it changes the process. You can work with the willing party to clarify their interests and draft a written proposal, then deliver it through shuttle diplomacy, carrying offers between parties without a joint session. This approach requires more time, but often produces a workable outcome. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblackthorne.com to get your copy.